Welcome to Rails with Jason. If you enjoyed today's episode and want more Rails tips and advice, head over to codewithjason.com, where I keep all my Rails articles and videos. Now on to the episode. Hey, today my guest is Ross Kaffenberger, software engineer at Stitch Fix. Ross, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm happy to be here, Jason. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Can you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, so like you said, I'm a software engineer at Stitch Fix. We are a company that provides a personalized styling and delivery of clothing to men, women, and children throughout the U.S. and also in the United Kingdom. I've been there for almost 2 years now. It's a pretty large organization relative to other teams I've worked on, a number of startups over the years. I've been writing software in Ruby on Rails, I think all the way back to 2007, so quite some time, and really enjoy all the opportunities that Rails has given me over the years.
Yeah, yeah, and you and I were talking pre-show about your blogging and my blogging, and we kind of decided that it would be an interesting topic if we talked about blogging, which is a little bit of a meta topic, but my hypothesis is that there's enough developers listening to this podcast who are interested in probably the benefits that blogging and speaking and all that kind of stuff can bestow on a person's career, that it would be a worthwhile topic.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a topic near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, mine as well. And I'm sure that blogging has helped me a lot in my career. It's one of those things that's difficult to measure the precise impact of it, but blogging and speaking and all that stuff has really helped me. So I'll start from the very top. When did you first start writing on the internet?
Oh, well, yeah, I think I would go back all the way to my early teaching days when I started writing about some of the, projects my students were doing in eighth grade science and robotics. But when I started blogging in the technical space and software engineering for real, I think it wasn't really until about 2010. So it's been about 10 years of on and off consistency. Early on was more just about trying to feel my way through it, maybe being a little bit nervous since I was still very early in my career, nervous about saying something that people would disagree with or might call me out for my lack of experience. And it took me a while to get some more confidence and sort of develop a pattern. Also, just committing to doing it more regularly. And I think in the past couple years or so, I've been fairly consistent and really found a good groove. But I certainly feel that now, if it's been a little too long since I've blogged, that itch to get something out, kind of like a responsibility almost. But also, I get a lot of joy out of sharing my knowledge. And it's something that I really have found to be personally satisfying in addition to some of those career benefits that you alluded to.
Yeah, same here. And maybe before we get too deep into it, it might be good for us to mention what a person can get out of blogging and like why you would want to do it in the first place. Because my fear would be that somebody might listen to this and they say, oh, blogging, that's not something that I do, so this is boring, see you later. And my answer to that would be that, like, it can... Well, okay, let me put it this way, and I'm curious to hear your answer, too, because it might be a different perspective. But when you find yourself in a job interview situation, the interviewer needs some way to judge how good they think you are and whether they should hire you. And they can use any number of methods for that. Like they can ask you technical questions. They can ask you how many golf balls fit on a school bus.
Yeah.
Or they can give you some kind of take-home quiz, which like people complain about those little take-home projects a lot. But they need some way to judge your skills. So if you have a well-known blog, if you have a strong internet presence or something like that, it doesn't exactly have to be blogging. It can be speaking or podcasting or anything, but something out there that gives them some evidence that says this person knows what they're talking about, then that can kind of like grease the chute and get you in there a lot faster. And sometimes you even bypass the interview process altogether. Like the job that I have now, I didn't interview for it. I don't think my boss even knows like if I have a college degree or not or anything like that. Like there was no vetting because the way he found me was that he found one of my blog posts. And so like I was already vetted in that way. So that's my answer. But what would your answer be, Ross, if somebody asked like, well, what are the benefits of blogging? Why should anybody bother?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting you bring up the point around, you know, the career benefits and job opportunity discussion. I suppose I would say for you to have that as a goal is certainly, you sort of just collectively, anyone who's considering blogging, to have that as a goal in mind is certainly a valid one. I would say, speaking for myself, I had perhaps more of initially a desire to provide some kind of feedback mechanism so that I could share what I was learning and also get some discussions going. I think there was definitely an aspect rooted in my background in education as a school teacher that I definitely get a lot out of sharing what I know, and that there's a lot of personal satisfaction that comes with that. And I think there's some maybe just, I suppose, innocent kind of motivations for me initially getting into it. I think to do blogging well, I feel like it has to be something that you really believe in and want to do. And that could be around career motivation and expanding your reach and your surface area, or potentially setting yourself up to grease the wheels, like you said, get your foot in the door. I would say that has to be something that speaks to you and resonates with you and can act as that motivator, because I think just writing one blog post probably won't do the trick. I think it has to be something that you are willing to do on a regular basis. And to the extent that it's certainly much harder to get eyeballs in front of just a single blog post. So the more that you're doing it regularly, the more people see that you're doing it regularly and want to come back and see what new things you've written. I think there's to some extent, getting that career benefit aspect will definitely take time. But sort of getting back to my first sort of response to your question, I think it really you have to find a reason that is motivating for yourself. And I don't think I can tell you, you have to do this to benefit your career. There's definitely plenty of successful folks that have not blogged at all. And I would say, on the other hand, there's probably plenty of folks that probably would say they blog regularly and haven't seen those career benefits. But I would say in my case, it's definitely helped the more consistent I've become throughout my career to be able to get the conversation started and to get through that initial sort of weeding out of like the cover letters and the introduction, so to speak. I haven't been as fortunate as you to get a job, without any of that prelude in the interview cycle, unfortunately. But maybe if I keep at it, that day will come. But I think as I've found momentum and found topics that I've sort of focused in and zeroed in on, I think that's certainly expanded my sort of career benefit side of what I get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I suppose as I think about it more, I have other motivations as well. I I view everything in life through the lens of self-aggrandizement and building my own ego. So that was the first thing that came to mind for me. But there's other motivations
also
too.
Also valid.
Yeah. Yeah. And along with that is like, well, maybe there's a topic that like where I find the existing documentation lacking. And I'm just like personally offended that there's no good resource out there. Like, for example, what I'm working on right now is like a super comprehensive guide to the RSpec syntax, which I don't think really exists out there. There's the RSpec documentation on relish.net or whatever it is.
Yep.
And that stuff is like pretty good, but like I think there's room for something that's even better than that. And so like there's something really satisfying about creating something and being able to legitimately say, this is the best piece of documentation for this thing that exists in the world. That's really satisfying, which again goes back to my ego stroking motivations. But then also, you know, there's I guess there's this concept that some people call altruism, which is somewhat alien to me at helping other people instead of just helping yourself. But it's also satisfying to put something out there and have somebody say, thank you so much. This really helped me. I was confused before. Now I'm not confused anymore. And to know that you actually like help somebody get further, that's a great part of it too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't doing this for you know, a lot of those same, I guess, you know, air quote, selfish reasons. You know, I definitely like feeling validated and recognize, you know, that when there's areas that I have a lot of knowledge in, and like, I think in a similar fashion, I've kind of seen like the space around Webpack and Webpacker within the Rails ecosystem as having a real lack of sort of focused knowledge and documentation, and wanting to fill that gap with what I think is some experience that can speak to other people. I really do get a lot of satisfaction around folks, you know, sort of giving me that feedback that is, you know, says that they learned something from it or they got a lot out of it. I certainly will like continue along that path until I feel like, you know, maybe I'm not getting that response quite as much anymore. So yes, I'm definitely there with you that there's some of that feeling of being propped up a bit by having that, you know, experience of folks supporting your work in a positive way. I think there's also a flip side to that, that it can sometimes be difficult sometimes I might write something that folks would disagree with or might call out as flat out wrong or incorrect. Or maybe there's some fact that I overlooked or some opinion that rubs somebody the wrong way. And I try to be also level-headed and take not necessarily bad, but the criticism along with the positive, you know, reinforcement. So I think that takes some getting used to as well. And it could be often cited as perhaps a hurdle to sort of breaking through that barrier of blogging your first time or blogging regularly. It certainly in my case was a fear initially when I started out, you know, just that fear of being wrong on the internet and the hordes of trolls coming to bang down your door and tell you how what they think of your opinion. So
have you experienced that very much with your technical writings, like people saying you're wrong?
I have occasionally. I would say that I have not tended to write the kinds of posts that are framed in a way to create a lot of controversy. So perhaps that has caused me to get a few less clicks in the acknowledging that it's, you know, I'd be more likely to get readers if I took some strong positions around things and created that sense of controversy that tends to get a lot of response. I tend to steer more into the lane of here is something you might not have known about this topic and what I think is interesting about it. And I think there's value in that at an objective level. It probably doesn't generate quite as much of that response. So I don't know if that's perhaps says maybe I'm, you know, realizing something about my blogging style in that regard. Like maybe I'm avoiding some of that controversy and I might benefit from stepping out of that comfort zone a little bit. I also feel like I've chosen some topics too that really do have a lack of documentation and knowledge floating around, and have seen a real opportunity to fill that gap. And perhaps just that territory hasn't been as controversial as one might think.
Yeah, some topics are just like pretty dry and technical, and there's not a lot of space for controversy. Like most testing stuff, although testing can be somewhat of a controversial topic, most of the stuff inside of testing is not very controversial. It's like you write your setup and your exercise and your assertion, and that's what a test is. And it's, if you're there and reading it, you're probably already on board that like tests are good, and we're not going to have an argument about whether tests are good and bad and stuff like that. Yeah. And my experience is that I get very little negative feedback. One thing that helps is to have very few people read your material. Then you get a lot less negative feedback when that's the case. But it's not very much negative. The thing that hurts the most is occasionally people tell me that I'm wrong, and I reflect, and it turns out that, yes, I was in fact wrong, which is, in my world, probably the worst possible thing that can happen is if I'm wrong about something. But in those cases, you know, big deal. Like, I go back and I write another post being like, hey, you know what? I have this certain opinion about such and such. I made these realizations, and now I think this instead. I can do that. Or if it's something minor, I can just change the blog post. Or I can just like say forget the whole thing and like, yeah, I was wrong. It doesn't really matter. It's the benefits that come from writing far outweigh any of the like psychological pain that comes with getting negative feedback. And the funny thing is, you can write a blog post. Maybe you've experienced this. I know I have. Mm-hmm. You get a blog post and you might get 20 positive comments and you get one negative comment. But for some reason, it's in our human nature to fixate on that one negative comment and ignore the 20 positive comments.
For sure. We tend to sort of over-index on the negative or constructive criticism. I think I've definitely experienced that when it's come to both like a strong position on an opinion and with like what you described as a factual error. I think there in both cases, there's a real opportunity for growth there. So like it just what you illustrated, like what I heard was you took the time to reflect and you made some corrections. You accepted that there was an error and you took some steps to correct that. I think that is a great sort of illustration of, you know, how one can learn and grow from, you know, that kind of experience. Like, you know, on the other side, you could have easily gotten defensive or, you know, gotten into a back and forth argument or not maybe accepted that there was some other viewpoint or some other way of looking at the problem. I've certainly had like that instinct at times. And it definitely hurts sometimes or I sort of feel like that guilt, like, oh, I didn't look into this issue deep enough to actually validate what I was saying about it. But it does become a real good opportunity. So like next time I write about this topic or sort of venture into this territory, you know, I really will take that extra time to maybe look at the source code to make sure what I'm saying about its behavior will actually be true. I think there's, like you said, again, here's like an opportunity where writing can teach you something about yourself as much as it is just on the surface designed to teach other people something that you know to others. So there's a great sort of cycle there.
So before we go much further, I want to address two things, which are for someone who's new to programming, they might have two objections to the idea of blogging or any of these other things like talking at conferences and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. which are, one, I have no business writing. I don't know anything yet. And two, I don't know what to write about. So mm-hmm. maybe we can address those two, which I think both are, they sound like legitimate objections on the surface, but I would argue that they are, neither one is actually a good reason not to write if you do want to write. So the first one, well, before I pontificate on that, let me turn that over to you. If somebody says, I'm not an expert, I can't write anything because I don't know stuff yet, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is definitely something I've remember saying to myself, you know, back early in my career, and, you know, some to some extent still kind of think from time to time when I'm venturing into territory that's unfamiliar to me, like what value can I offer, given that what I sort of think is that there's all these other people out there that know more than me. And I think maybe one way to sort of flip that problem on its head is like to recognize that while there might be many people who are experienced, they don't have the experience that you have regardless, right? So no matter what, you know, both you and I could say we've been developing in Rails for a long time. There's a lot of stuff that you can teach me about, you know, based on your experience, as much as I would hope that I could be able to teach you. And there is also an aspect where I am pretty far removed at this point from my early days of programming. And for me as a maybe senior developer to understand the perspective better of somebody coming into the field, where I have a responsibility on my team to be a mentor and to help folks that are coming in, I would very much appreciate the perspectives and viewpoints of somebody who's newer to be sharing those regularly and in a way that I can understand, hey, maybe here's A, something that they can teach me about their experience that I don't know, or maybe could help me understand better how I can help them perhaps. And there's, I think for all of us, probably difficulty in recognizing just that very fact that no matter what, we have experience that other people don't know about. It could be like a given, I didn't, you know, learn how to program at a boot camp. And for somebody who's just getting into the field to write about their experience at whatever boot camp they're attending, I could learn a ton from that. That might help me provide some context to someone who asked me, should I go do a boot camp? You know, honestly, I couldn't tell from my own experience, but I can certainly reach out to other folks who are going through that same time. So I think when it comes to like that question of, do I have, you know, the ability to say something that other people will listen to? I think that really just comes from writing about your experience and what you'd be interested in writing about. And I think that ties in directly to the other question is like, I don't know what to write about. I don't have anything interesting to say. And I would definitely challenge that impression. Maybe not get so worried about who's going to read your blog post, because all chances being, unless you end up on the front page of Hacker News, probably not many people are going to read that first blog post. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about like what people think. And the more that you can separate, you know, your you know, motivations to blog from those potential obstacles, and sort of look at them maybe as opportunities for growth, certainly I think is a great way to sort of be able to move forward and take that first step.
Yeah. In my blogging, I've discovered something paradoxical, which is that the more blog posts I write, the more ideas for blog posts mm-hmm. I get. So maybe at the beginning I have 3 ideas for posts, and I write those 3 blog posts, and now I have 10 ideas, and then I write all 10 of those, and now I have 50 ideas. And eventually my idea list is so long that I'm never, ever going to get to the end of it. which is the exact opposite of the way you would think. You would think that you like have ideas and then you use up your ideas and you're just done. But no, ideas beget more ideas.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes, and I have that same experience, like I think the more that you're forced to think about a particular issue, I think the more you are developing expertise in that subject matter. And that can directly lead to your brain just making new connections and generating new ideas. And sometimes it could be reframing the content that you've already written in a different way. You know, I think there's probably perhaps more than one way to slice a certain idea, maybe coming at it from a different perspective or maybe reframing the problems in a different way. And you could actually potentially repurpose some content to build into that new idea. But I think for me, a key point there, I think that's kind of thing started happening for me when I focused my writing around a given topic. In my case, over the last year or two, around just how Webpacker and Webpack fits into the Rails ecosystem. So I think initially my sort of area that I was thinking about ideas was too broad for me to sort of find something that would get me that momentum that you've described, like the paradox of choice. Like as soon as I started deciding that I was going to draw a line in the sand is I'm going to stay within this boundary, I started getting more ideas. And I think there's I think kind of speaks to that paradox you were describing.
Yeah. Yeah. I read that book, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. And there was this one passage of it where the kind of main character guy, he was a professor at some college in Montana, and he had this student who was like pretty smart, but she was having like a real mental block around writing this paper. She said she was going to write a paper about America. And the professor is like, well, that's just way too broad. How about you write a paper about Bozeman, Montana? And she went and tried, but she couldn't. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, forget, like, don't write about a paper about Bozeman, Montana. Write a paper about the courthouse building and start with the top left brick. And start writing about the top left brick. And she did it. And then it just like all came flowing when she started writing about the top left brick. I've had kind of a similar experience. Like, I had been trying for a long time to come up with a course to create. And at first I thought that a course on Rails testing was a good idea. Maybe I thought that. I'm not sure. But what I think now is that that was way too broad. But I whittled that down from like, well, maybe not a course just on Rails testing because that's too broad. But maybe Capybara testing. And then I realized even that was too broad. And so I narrowed it to just RSpec, because in order to use Capybara, you have to use RSpec, at least if you're using RSpec for your framework. But even that was too broad, so I narrowed it down to just RSpec syntax. And now I'm working on that. And that's finally like the right level of narrowness that the topic is actually tractable. And it turns out that there's a lot to say about just RSpec syntax. So that's how I arrived at that little thing that I mentioned earlier. So I guess if somebody's having a hard time thinking of something to write, ask yourself if maybe you're being too broad and you could benefit from narrowing it down.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great story to sort of think about getting all the way down to a brick and then the ideas start flowing. I feel like that could be a great exercise, not just, you know, for oneself, but when someone sort of gives me that response and when we talk about blogging and they say, well, I don't have anything interesting to say, I don't have anything to write about, like to start asking those questions, to sort of zero in on like some key idea. It's amazing how much you can draw out of just like the tiniest sort of nugget. I think that there's probably like this response, like, well, you know, if I pick something that's so defined and so precise that you know, I'm basically, you know, ignoring all the other possibilities there. But, you know, I feel like that's where really good writing can come from. And I think that folks will be drawn to that. Like, I might not have woken up thinking, you know, I need to learn something about RSpec syntax, but, you know, when you come at it from the right frame of mind, like, it can draw people in, and you might be surprised how much you can squeeze out of not just the idea of focusing yourself, but also how folks can be drawn to something maybe that they otherwise might not have expected to be when you know, you get it across, you know, to more folks. So I definitely have found that to be true.
Yeah, and another tactic that could be helpful is to, like, lower the bar and give yourself permission to do a bad job. Like, mm-hmm. if you can't think of a good idea, write a bad idea. Like, if you can't think of an interesting blog post, then write a boring blog post. It's completely fine, because what will probably happen is you'll write your crappy blog post, and it might not actually turn out that crappy, but even if it does, then you can write another blog post after that, and it'll be a little bit better. Like, your first attempt is probably not going to be that good, but what's great about that is, like, nobody is paying all that much attention in the beginning anyway. And mm-hmm. so there's not, like, a super bright spotlight shining on your work. You're not going to get 100 negative comments on your first blog post ever. It's interesting. If you, there's this YouTube guy I watch, he just calls himself Chef John, and his cooking videos are super good, but he's been doing it for a really long time. And I've stumbled across some of his older videos from, like, 2006 or something, and they're, like, pretty bad. Like, the lighting is bad, the camera angle is bad, the audio quality is bad, just, like, the videos aren't very good at all. But it's fine, because obviously he, like, felt his way through it, and now all those things that I just said were bad now are great, and his videos mm-hmm. are so great. So my point is, like, you have to start somewhere, and you can always improve.
I really love watching that transition. Like, when I discover, and I think that YouTube comment resonated with me, as I've discovered a few, like, in areas I'm interested in. Like, I do triathlons, so I follow some, you know, triathletes, and, you know, many of them, and it's not like it's a big popular sport, but you know, there's one triathlete named Eric Lagerstrom, who's started, like, a whole movement around just these videos that were really raw and just sort of random thoughts through the day, and now they've become, like, a big production. So very similar to what you've described. But I think the great thing about the internet is that, like, the risk of failing is quite, you know, low. Like, there's not really a whole lot to lose, but there's so much you could potentially gain from the process of committing to an idea, or just to the process at least, and continuing to work at it and chip away and refine your craft. I still feel like, even after years of doing this, that there's a ton just in the craft of writing that I have to improve. I've started just trying to branch out in some of my reading material to, you know, not just look at other technical writers and software, but just to become a better writer myself. Like, it's been quite a long time since I've had, you know, the benefit of school and universities to give me feedback on my writing directly. And that's not necessarily something that I'm going to get by putting out blog posts on the internet. So continuing to reflect on that process and sort of the output and really spend more time on the editorial bits, I think has a lot in common with, you know, the YouTube creator who's production quality goes up as they spend more time at it.
Yeah, that's true. I think when I started my current blog, I started with one of the default WordPress themes, and it looked very amateurish. And then I, you know, just as a side note, it's really hard to find, like, a good theme that you can just grab off the shelf. Most of them are designed for something other than a technical blog, and so you really have to shoehorn it in. And by the time you make all the modifications you have to make, like, it's not really the same thing anymore anyway. So I've discovered that I'm actually better off just learning design skills. And that has been a really interesting journey, because it's like this whole like other discipline that has taken and is going to continue to take a really long time, because that's like a whole different skill, and it's moreover a skill that doesn't tend to come naturally to developers. But I've learned certain principles, like, there's this great book, The Non-Designer's Design Book, by a woman named Robin Williams, who's obviously not the same Robin Williams as Robin Williams. But there's this acronym in there. It's a silly acronym that it just happens to be CRAP, but it stands for contrast, repetition, alignment, and proximity, I think it is. So just super quick, contrast, like on my blog, my H1s are black and really thick, bold, and then my H2s are blue and underlined. So like there's a great contrast between my H1s and H2s. So it's really obvious that like this is not a mistake. These are like two distinctly different things. And then like repetition. If you like repeat the same colors and same fonts and stuff like that throughout your website, that's going to look better than if it's just random. Alignment, things that are aligned together are perceived as belonging together. Like you typically want to always align everything left or align everything right or everything center. That's a little different on web. This was a print design book, but when things line up in a design, it tends to look better than when they don't. And then lastly, proximity, things that are in proximity to each other are perceived as belonging together. So just learning those like principles, that was like one step that got me a little further on that journey of becoming a designer. So I guess that's another like side benefit of this whole journey, is like that is a super useful and portable skill that translates to my regular work, because obviously like when we're building websites, it doesn't hurt if you also can make your websites that you're building look kind of good.
Yeah, you know, that sort of made me think of the, you know, there's this aspect of, you know, ways that the, you know, the act of blogging and the process of learning the craft and, like you said, applying and learning some new skills around design that are really beneficial to you and your growth. I think that that sort of brings to mind also, like, not all of those things are things that you have to figure out as you're getting started with blogging, right? Like, there is definitely no expectation, especially in the world of software development, that everyone's the best writer or that you have the perfect design on your website. In fact, probably you could probably get away with having a really poor design and have a really successful blog. And I think there's a lot of great examples of that. You know, I think, you know, when it comes to like what the kind of things that I focus on, or at least have been trying to get better at when it comes to like the parts of the craft that I want to improve, is like, how do I make the writing itself even more valuable to my my readers? I can't say that I've changed the design much in the past few years. It's certainly gone through a number of like upgrades of CSS framework and things like that. But I would say that my design skills are pretty poor. I would hope that, and I don't know that in my case that adding like that extra design kind of craft to my blog would improve the value, but I think there's a lot of context where it could. Sort of resource that I keep thinking of as we're talking about this is a book by an author named and technologist Kathy Sierra. She wrote a book called Badass: Making Users Awesome, and I think the whole idea of this book is how we tend to take on our projects and our business ideas, or maybe our blog, we often tend to take on these kinds of ventures with the wrong idea in mind, you know, and it tries to recenter the problem on what's going to add the most value to your users. And I don't think that I particularly have figured that out, but it like, you know, when we're talking about the craft of improving around and using blogging as sort of a venue to improve oneself, that's sort of the area that I've been thinking of. And I think it comes down to, for me, you know, the quality of the writing and how I'm framing certain problems, that picking the right kind of problem to dive into. Sometimes I think that the quality often is a function of just how much time and energy I have to put into something. And there's definitely varying levels of degrees that I've been able to apply that on any given blog post. But I think I, you know, if in the absence of, say, a consistent, you know, exponential growth in readership, I think that's where, like, these things, you can really get more of that personal satisfaction out of it. You know, you're describing ways of developing skills in certain areas of design, or whether it's just the craft of writing itself. I think to be able to consider these as ultimate benefits of blogging, I think will then pay those dividends and whatnot in your career. So
yeah,
I'm in total agreement.
Yeah. And lest the listener get scared or intimidated, I don't think there needs to be a lot to the craft of writing part of blogging, especially when you're getting started. Mm-hmm. I think it's completely appropriate to spend more effort on that as you go. But just to get started, I think the most important thing is clarity. As long as you're getting your message across, I think, like, one of the worst insults anybody could ever give me is like, "Oh, you have really good writing," because, like, that tells me that my style obscured my message. And so what I want is for the style to be invisible, and so that the message can come through, which is actually, not to contradict myself, but, like, the style of making your style so invisible that all you can see is the thing you're trying to say, and not have your style get in the way. That's actually pretty difficult to do.
Yeah.
And that's something that I continually work on. But I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that good writing is all about, like, flourish and metaphors and stuff like that. I don't think it's that. I think it's clarity, especially in technical writing.
Yeah, I think that clarity is definitely a big one. I think that it's definitely okay, though, to provide some aspect of style. Like, I can, it doesn't necessarily have to be flourished language or maybe some, like, idealized version of what good writing could be, because there's different styles of writing that fit different contexts. If I think about, like, some really successful bloggers, one person that comes to mind is Julia Evans. And I think she has a style that really sort of reflects some of her personality in her writing, right? So even though she is providing, I think, some really clear ideas and, you know, very interesting content too, because she's often on the front page of Hacker News. I think that one thing that really comes out in her writing is her energy and her enthusiasm. You know, you might see a lot of exclamation points and like a lot of admissions of, like, here's stuff I didn't know and stuff I just learned. And even though I've, you know, been writing and I've got all this experience, like, I continue to be surprised by what I don't know and all the cool things that I'm learning. And I think that that style really works for her and really comes out in her writing. And so there's certainly, like, an aspect of what I'm trying to get at there is, like, making it your own, right? Like, that doesn't have to be your formula, but something that works for you. And I think that is true to yourself, I think, really is maybe a good sort of secondary goal in terms of the way you approach content.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think it's a great idea to let your personality shine through in your work. The thing that I don't like is when there's, like, put on flourish and stuff like that, because I think that's really easy to see through. You mentioned Julia Evans. Julia Evans' material deeply upsets me, because my stuff will never ever be as good as hers, because the design is great. She has like these illustrations. It's just, it's great, and like I can see why her work ends up on the front page of Hacker News so much, because it's just it conveys the ideas, not only, but also like there's a lot of personality in that too, which can go a long way when you're covering really dry topics. Like here's one of her posts, like cool Vim feature sessions. It's like that could easily be so incredibly boring, but when you package it in this entertaining way, it gets a lot more interesting.
I think that it definitely, folks who have found like some kind of way of crafting their message in their personality and their style really is something that I aspire to. I don't feel like I've quite found that, and something I'm continuing to work towards. Like, do I, if I sort of reflect on my writing, does who I am really come out? I don't know how that important that is. Maybe someone else to throw out, who I think you've had on the podcast before, Nate Berkopek. I feel like in sort of the Rails performance space, I really enjoy his writing. You know, some aspects of what I see, like his blog posts tend to be very, very thoroughly researched and very in-depth. I think they tend to take some strong positions while also providing that deep technical content. You'll throw in some colorful language and some memes. And I think for him, that's yet another style that works. And I think that fits within like who he wants to be and present himself as. And, you know, I think there's, I guess these are just examples of like, there's no one way, right way to do it, but having that, like, that those character traits that maybe are representative, I feel like is something that I continue to strive towards.
Yeah, same here. Okay, maybe something we could spend just a little bit of time on in the last few minutes of the episode is, once you start writing, how can you get people to actually read what you've written? I spent a lot of years, I think I started blogging like, and even before the MySpace days, but the first blogs that I remember writing are using the blog feature on MySpace. I would just like write a blog about what I did that day or something, and my friends would read it. Completely pointless. But then I got into technical blogging in like the mid, late 2000s, and almost nobody, like I would never get comments or anything on my blogs. It was just tumbleweeds on my blog. But that was back before I had any kind of focus. And now I feel like I have what you could call traction with my blog. People seem to like actually read my posts and comment and stuff like that. And it doesn't hurt that I throw these other things into the mix, like speaking at conferences, making YouTube videos, having this podcast, and all that stuff. But what would your advice be, Ross, if somebody said, okay, I've started writing blog posts, how do I get people to actually read this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, first you start a podcast, I think that there's definitely a lot of interest there. And if someone wrote the sort of the killer app or the killer course on answering that question, I'm sure it would be quite popular. I feel like for everyone, it's a little bit different. I would say this is, again, an area where I'm also sort of in the same boat as you. At least I've experienced the same sort of thing where it's taken time to get that traction. I don't think necessarily everyone needs a lot of time, but I can observe that there are a few things that have worked for people. And I think consistency is my sort of number one go-to. It doesn't necessarily mean every week or every month, but I think if there is a cadence that sort of matches, one's sort of free time and interest, that you can sort of develop some expectations around, you know, when people can come back for more content. I think that having, the ability to be able to continue to write over a period of time is important. And I think consistency is the sort of trait that I strive for in a lot of aspects of, like, when I think of growth and areas of improvement. So that could be one place to focus, right? If you're only writing once in a blue moon, you might not have as much success. I think something that's also helped me in particular has been to be an active member of the community. And that can mean a lot of different things for different folks. You mentioned speaking at conferences, which is something I've done a little bit of. That may or may not be for everyone, but there are certainly online forums. Like, there's the Ruby and Rails forum where there's activity, or there's GitHub issues where you can help out. There's Stack Overflow where you can answer questions or ask questions and be someone who's visible in a number of different platforms. I think that the more people you get in front of in different contexts, the more opportunity you have to share and to be able to make connections with people. I think that in-person connections, I think, can be just as valuable, maybe a little bit harder to scale, but, like, the more that you can reach out to folks, have conversations, you know, get on people's radar, you know, reach out to people maybe who are posting, you know, some questions kind of in the area of interest that you have, and starting conversations with them. You know, I've reached out to folks who've, you know, complained about their experience with Webpacker and just said, hey, can we set up some time to chat? And like, perhaps that's a little more of like a grassroots approach, but I think for me, it's been helpful to have those personal connections and, like, that networking side of things to be able to grow. And besides that, you know, I think there's no magic bullet, but it you know, can come down to just a simple fact of a combination of great writing and, you know, the writing that creates value for people and a little bit of luck, you know. So for some folks, finding that magic combination may come sooner rather than later. And, you know, I don't think that there's any one right way to do it, but at least these are the approaches that I've been taking, and they're starting to pay some dividends. But you know, for me personally, I feel like I still have a lot of ground to cover, and you know, we'll continue to sort of tweak the knobs, so to speak, on some of these approaches.
Yeah, there is this guy Gary Halbert who was like a copywriter, and he was teaching this class or something once, and he asked his students, like, if you could start a restaurant in a town and have one advantage over everybody else, what would it be? And some people said, like, we'd have the best food or whatever it may be. And he said what he would want is a starving crowd. And so, like, that makes a lot of sense, you know? Like, yeah. If your restaurant has a starving crowd waiting outside, then almost nothing else matters. And so I think about that sometimes. And when I'm thinking about things to write, like, it's important. If I want people to read it and care about it, then I have to write about things that people want to read. Mm-hmm. And so the question obviously is, how do you find out what people want to read about? And you can kind of do research online to find the kinds of questions people are asking. I learned a lot in 30 by 500, the Amy Hoy and Alex Hillman class, about how to do that. And for a long time, my research would include, like, going on the Ruby and the Rails subreddits and just looking at the kinds of questions people were asking. I noticed people were asking a lot of questions about Rails testing. And so I, like, drilled down a little deeper on that and started. And what I found, and this is another thing I learned in 30 by 500, is that if you write a post that answers a question that one specific human being actually asked, then it's almost guaranteed that people are going to have that post resonate with them, because you answered a real person's question. And so I've taken that approach, and that has worked really well. And then I've written some posts which were answers to questions no one has ever asked. Like, I wrote a post recently about connections between programming and philosophy, which is, like, nobody was asking questions about that. And not surprisingly, like, nobody really cared about that post that much. A few people. But that was more just like, I wanted to write that post for the fun of it. But if you want to get people to read your posts, I think writing the answers to questions people are asking is a great way to go. And then one more thing that I'll add is, like, all these other channels, like speaking at conferences, doing YouTube videos, going on podcasts or hosting your own podcast, these things all kind of synergize with each other. And I think kind of add more traffic to the overall thing. Like, some of my blog post readers, they say they found me through my podcast and stuff like that. So all those things add up together.
For sure. You know, when you mentioned, answering questions, that's definitely a way that I frame a lot of my content. And for sure, if someone's asking that question, quite likely someone else is going to be putting that same question into their Google search bar, you know, and that's a great way to connect things. You know, I sort of think of, like, what you're doing is, you're solving somebody's problem. You're speaking to their pain and providing them with a remedy. And typically, we have a lot of shared experience when it comes to software development. So writing to that one person does end up ultimately, hopefully, speaking to many.
Yeah, very much. Okay, very last question for you, Ross. Where can people go to find you and your work online?
Well, you can find me on Twitter and GitHub at Rasta. And I write on my blog at rasta.net. I tend to focus on the area of Rails and JavaScript, and more lately about Webpacker. I work at Stitch Fix, and we're definitely hiring. So you can check us out at multithreaded.stitchfix.com to learn more about our engineering culture.
Multithreaded.stitchfix.com. Just making a little note, because we'll include all this stuff in the show notes. Ross, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Jason. Great to talk with you.